And me?
Hello?
Your conference is being recorded.
Okay, hello.
Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Hi, Denine.
And hi to whoever else is there.
Linda Ellis.
Oh, good. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Hanging in. Hanging in.
I'm warming up. Woohoo.
Yeah. We have another minute left, so we'll wait for a few more to join us. I heard a few beeps.
Oh, good.
Okay, good.
Hi, Linda, by the way. Sorry.
Hi. We didn't get to introduction.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's okay.
Well, at least tomorrow's Friday, ladies.
Yeah.
It is. Are you done having blizzards in your part of the world?
I doubt it, Kathy.
Oh, you have got slammed this year.
I don't even when we get a skiff now, it's just turns my stomach almost. Well, it is 8 o'clock. I started the recording. I hope everybody got the presentation slides that I sent out this morning. If not, either email me or let me know in some way, and we will get those to you. Kathy, thank you again for this series of calls that you have been doing on dual sensory diagnosis. And tonight we're going to talk about, Kathy is going to talk about transition for those youth that have a dual sensory diagnosis. So I'm anxious to hear about that. And then, Kathy, are you doing another one in March on handling puberty, right?
I am.
Okay, good. I just wanted to double
check. I've been a busy beaver this year.
Oh, I know it.
I think the one in March on puberty, is that for dual sensory or is that for...
That was for everybody, all the kids.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good evening, everyone who's on the call, and I'm just going to go ahead and get started. In the cover picture on the slide, we have a young person who is getting up close and personal with a horse. And the look on that person's face is amazing. We don't really know what he or she can. I can't tell if that's a guy or a gal. I think it's a gal, but what they see. But whatever it is, they're in a position where they're experiencing active learning. And it looks to me like this person is having a great life, at least right at this moment. And I think that's what we want for our children. So going on to slide two, sometime in our child's adolescence, we began to think ahead about when the bus doesn't come anymore. Now, your child might not ride a bus. They might ride a special bus, but you know what I mean. And so you're thinking, well, my child is growing up. We do have to prepare. What kind of support is my child going to need in the future, and when will they need it, and how do we start? He or she has pretty unique needs, so how are we going to get these met? How do I get insider information about options? Those are some of the kind of questions that we have that will help us start planning. One of the most important questions we can ask as we prepare for transition is, what does or what will both a great day and a great life for my child look like? And start to build that vision. At first, it's kind of like doing a picture puzzle in that you might just have a frame and with the pieces around the outside, but you haven't filled in the middle and it's looking kind of blank in there. You're going to be thinking about, these are questions you want to think about with your child, not necessarily for your child, depending on how much support they need from you right now. We also want to think about your child becoming more self-determined, no matter what level that's going to be at, and how they're going to solve problems after high school. Where will they live? What are they going to do all day? Are they going to work? How will they stay connected with the people that are important to them, and how will they make friends? What will be the challenges in staying healthy? And one question that I think is on our minds that we don't always get encouraged to ask in public meetings is, will we ever be done? Will we be able to launch this child into an adult life and then be able to sit back and move into a different kind of parenting relationship? Will we be the lifelong caregivers, or will we allow someone else to help us with that? What will that look like? Will my child be able to be independent, as many people with dual sensory losses are? And are we selling them short? Are we expecting enough? Are we expecting too much? So part of transition is asking the right questions. And the truth is that any questions you have are the right questions. So I'm going to go on to slide 3. Families need realistic, actionable information. Oh, I love that word. With which they can make a wide range of decisions, not just at transition, but throughout the lifespan. So we're going to start with the visualization prompt. That's not something you know instantly and you have the picture all filled in. But we're going to go through a series of steps to start finding out what is possible. What have other young people, like my child, done with their adult lives? What's out there for them? How are they living their lives? What is possible? And I think that I really seldom go out into the community where I don't see a person now with a disability living in their community, working, enjoying time with family and friends. But it isn't as often that I go out and see people in the community where I see a person with a dual sensory loss, because that's still rare. And so I might not have a good picture of what's possible at all. And so when we're sitting around the table and people are saying, well, what does your child want to do after high school? Not only is your child saying, I have no idea, but you're saying, I have no idea. Because you haven't maybe built that vision, but it's not too late to start, and so we want to work on that. The next important question is, okay, once we have a vision, which kind of fills in slowly, what do we need to make that vision a reality? And how do we get there? So if you can keep those three buckets, if you will, kind of in mind, those are the stimulus to get you started. I'm going to talk about a number of resources that are available to you, and one of them is the National Center on Deaf Blindness. If you use a search engine and you type in those words, you will pull up the National Center on Deaf Blindness. And it's a huge website. In fact, it's going to be transitioning from March 4th. They're coming under the umbrella of the Helen Keller National Center. So they're transitioning their website. It's going to have a slightly new look. But it has what my favorite word of the week, oodles of information. And one of the important pieces is their page on transition. So I put the link on this slide, and you want to go there. And as you're building your vision, I encourage you to look at the life stories of young people with a dual sensory loss who are transitioning, because it will help open up your world to the vast array of possibilities that there are if if you're like me and someone says, close your eyes and think about how it looks. I close my eyes and I see black. I don't see how it looks. So I have to build that vision a different way, and I encourage you to share these kinds of stories with your child's teacher. You may have a great teacher for your child, or great teachers, but this may be their first career experience with a young person with a dual sensory loss, and so they're still building their vision of what's possible as well. Same thing for teachers involved with your child who are teachers of the visually impaired or teachers of the deaf. If you have those kinds of specialists on your child's team, no matter how long we've been in this vision, people are still knocking our socks off with what they can do. So we're still building our vision of what's possible. And this will help you start to get that. So that when people ask the question, you begin to see where some of the pieces go and what that future might look like. So there's a lot going on, and I don't know about you, but some days I have all I can do to put one foot in front of the other, and often I can't focus on this whole big picture thing because I can only take one step at a time and do one thing at a time. So I misspelled a word on the slide. Sorry, I like see a squirrel and I'm gone. So you got to focus your energy. So I encourage you to find out what your child's strengths are, build on those strengths, and explore their interests and support your child in doing that. You know what their strengths are. Do we tell them? Do we help them see how our interests and our strengths lead to future job possibilities, future lifelong learning experiences, future goals? The second thing you want to concentrate on at home is helping your child acquire self-directed behavior. And a lot of young people with disabilities, whether they have dual sensory disabilities or not, leave high school and they haven't really acquired as much self-directed behavior as we would like to see. And part of that is because we get in their way. It is so easy for me if I pick up my daughter, who's 30 years old, she gets in the car, and I'm like right into mom mode. Where are your gloves? Do you have your seatbelt on? Are you ready? Did you get your check? Okay, let's go. You know, and she doesn't have to do a thing. I'm doing all the thinking for her. I'm doing all the planning for her. I'm doing all the directing. And you fall into that pattern. That does not necessarily help your child prepare for life after high school. So start looking around their everyday routine, their everyday experiences, and look for those opportunities where you can offer that young person choice and control. Because even if you're overwhelmed with your day-to-day stuff, that's a gift that you can give your child in those little moments. Can they get involved in setting goals? And what would that look like? Maybe the goal for one person is just to get across the room. Maybe the goal for another person is more advanced than that. But let's start that process if we haven't already. The other thing that you want to focus your energy on is creating opportunities and levering connections. We live in a world where we push a button and information comes to us instantly. Everything happens at the touch of a button. And so maybe we've developed persistence in the area of advocating for our child or showing up at school meetings. But now we're going to need a different kind of skill set. We're going to need to be a catalyst to kind of create some opportunities. And we do that by leveraging our connection. We tell everyone we know, my son is graduating in 3 years, or my daughter graduates next year. and we're looking around to see what might be fun. She's really interested in. So we're leveraging those connections. And if you haven't done that before in your community, whether you live on a ranch or in a very small town or one of the hub communities in North Dakota, those are skills that we can work on as parents that will help open doors. So we're building our vision. We're helping our child explore their strengths and their interests. We're working on that self-directed behavior, and we're creating opportunities, and we're leveraging our connections. And we don't have to do that alone. Our child is surrounded by a host of people who are helping them, their teachers, their therapist, whoever. Okay, so I'm talking about transition in general, and I'm doing this from a parent perspective because it's hard to acquire this knowledge that I'm giving you is kind of insider knowledge from someone who's walked the walk, not only with my own child, but with a lot of other young people. So what's unique then to students who are deafblind, or if that word bothers you, then who have dual sensory impairment? So they need a lot more time than the average student to practice self-determination. They may not be an active learner. Hopefully they are, but they may be rather passive in some aspects of their life because they don't get the same amount of information coming in all the time that other people do. So really giving the opportunities to practice self-determination. We've already talked about developing and clarifying their interests and abilities. And if you look on the national website, the National Center for the Deafblind website, you'll see that almost every adult scenario that's portrayed began with an interest or a strength of that individual. We want our children to develop independent living skills, whether they're going to continue to reside in our home or whether they're going to go live in an apartment, whatever that vision is for them, to the greatest extent possible. Sometimes kiddos with dual sensory impairment have other cognitive and physical challenges as well, and they're going to need lifelong care. But they can still engage and have a great life through partial participation. And we still want to look for those opportunities where they can be as independent as possible, even if that's just someone's nodding their head to say, yes, I'm ready for you.
They're coming to finish in
my wheelchair.
They're finishing their video. Oh,
okay. The other thing that we want to do, especially for students with dual sensory impairment, is we want to learn the methods to increase the depth and the breadth of their social relationship. Because often they have worked at and you have such a close relationship with them because of the different kinds of physical boundaries that we sometimes have to take with our kids when they're using tactile systems of communication, for example, or they've just needed us for an extended period of time. And so there aren't too many other people in their personal private circle. And they're increasingly going to have to rely on people besides you. So it's really important to be building those social relationships. A lot of people that we know in high school, we don't see anymore because people move away after high school. So we're wanting to see if there's a couple of best friends, whether they have disabilities or not, who can remain in the student's life and stay connected. And finally, a student who is deafblind is still building their knowledge of what the world is like. They're still developing language concepts that other students may have intact, even if they're verbal and they're using symbolic language or sign language. because they have reduced amounts of information coming in, they're still building that. So this is not the student who we have them job shadow a couple things and they're done. They're ready to make their choice and their decision and off they go. It's not that simple. They need a wider variety in a longer set of experiences in different employment settings. So that's kind of what's unique to this population. So another really neat tool that's available through the National Center is what they call the READY tool. And it's a readiness evaluation of transition to adulthood for deafblind youth. I don't really like that term, readiness, because we can't wait until our children are ready. Our children might not be ready by the time they're 45 or 50. But you know what? They're going to graduate. High school's going to end anyway. So we do want to see where they're at. And so this tool offers very specific strategies that you can start doing before age 14 to 17. You can see the menu from the READY tool on the right. And it's really a toolkit. So each one of these links takes you into information about that. And that can help you structure your planning with your child as well as your participation in meetings. Your child, by the time their 16th birthday comes around, they need to have a transition plan in place. And I've learned that a number of parents will say, well, no one told me about that, or we don't know what that is, because sometimes a teacher will just view that as an extension of an IEP. And it's not. It's quite a bit more than that. So I think we do a disservice when we go that way. They mean well. They're trying to keep things simple. But a transition plan becomes part of the IEP. But it has a whole second set of goals. And these become the most important goals. These are your post-secondary goals. What do you want to achieve after high school? And then your annual goals need to become steps that will help you achieve those post-secondary goals. So that's different. We have one foot in the here and now and one foot in the future at the same time when we write those plans. I want to talk to you about a variety of things because I don't know who else on the call and what you already know. So I apologize if this is review. But when your child turns 18, that is the age of majority in North Dakota. And you have been acting as their legal guardian up until that point. But now the courts will begin to view you as a natural but not a legal guardian. And your son or your daughter will be the legal decision maker. And they're going to need some support for that. There's a lot of legal decisions that get made in our lives. A legal decision can start with something as simple as finding the release of information, deciding who gets access to that insider information about your child. They're making that decision now. And so you're really going to want to investigate something called supported decision making, because it's actually a fairly new concept that was put into the legislation in North Dakota in the last session that allows your child to ask you to be their helper with making decisions, and that has some legal status. If you become your child's full guardian, they have to give up all of their rights or most of their major rights. The court actually takes those away from them and says they're not capable. And often you can provide the same level of support for your child without that ruling. through some of the supported decision-making processes. I could do a whole workshop on supported decision-making. So other legal decisions have to do with health care, benefit planning for Social Security, Medicaid, workers with disability insurance, which we're lucky to have in this state, legal decisions for money management, setting up an ABLE account. And if you want to know more about that, you can ask. Getting a state identity card. So these are all some changes that are going to happen. You may be planning for your child to stay in school till they're 21, and they will now have something to say about that as a legal decision maker. So at least a year before your child turns 18, the school is going to notify you that the age of majority is coming up. And I want you to think about this holistically, meaning sometimes what we hear is, well, your child's going to turn 18 and you need to become a guardian. You need to start the guardianship process, call your DD program manager, and that's really kind of old thinking. It's much broader than that. There's a lot of things to put in place. And it can be something that's done with your child, not to your child, with their input as much as is possible. I'm going on to slide number 9. We've talked about support for employment. So a lot of work experiences. The research shows that kiddos who have work experience during high school have better outcomes in adulthood. Job shadowing. Getting connected with vocational rehabilitation services, because those employment supports will continue into adulthood for your child. And then we have something called customized employment, supported employment, and pre-vocational services. This is all a lot of jargon, but one of the most important services on the list is customized employment. So customized employment is an employment service for your young adult as a job seeker that seeks for a fit between their abilities, their interests, their preferences, what would make an ideal condition, and what the employer is looking for or offering in terms of physical demands, work conditions, the work culture, the social demands, and what kinds of tasks they need done. That is unique because typically in supported employment, that's not how it works. In supported employment, we look around, we see what positions and careers are available. We kind of pursue one. If the person needs some training, after high school, we get them that training, and then they have to fit into that existing job. For students with dual sensory impairment as well as other multiple kinds of disabilities, that model may work, but it often doesn't. So unless they have a lot of high skill, they're going to need some help and something a little more customized. So one thing you can do to prepare for a transition is start reading up on customized employment. Talk to a VR caseworker about customized employment. Learn all you can to get that into your child's future plan. At the same time we're juggling all of this, we're also beginning to fill in the pieces on support for living. Some of our children who have a dual sensory loss will be able, with the training and support they get during their school years, to live independently after high school, and that's very exciting. Other students will need support for living. And as you begin to explore options, you also want to take a careful look at the care and the support guidelines, and you want to start developing really good information. You have probably put into place hundreds of different simple, everyday practical things that you do with your child, whether that's managing their cochlear implant or helping them get the mail to dressing, bathing, cooking, 1,001 things we do throughout the day in our family life. And there's all these little informal hidden supports that your child needs. And the only one who knows about them are your child, who may or may not be able to communicate that clearly to others and you. So we want to use the videos in our cell phones. We want to create scrapbooks, whatever you need to do to begin documenting some of that, so that other people who may step in and help you after high school can really understand what your child needs. If your child has not had any training in orientation and mobility, and then you're going to want to get that worked into their plan. You see in the picture a young person with a cane. Using a cane is part of what we teach in orientation and mobility, but it's by no means everything. Your child doesn't have to use a cane at all to need orientation and mobility. So start talking to the TVI about this, because they have access to those services through North Dakota Vision Services School online, and they can start helping your team take a look at that. Part of support for living is giving your child the opportunity to assume more responsibilities. You're going to want to think about transportation or driving. We might automatically think that a student who is deafblind cannot drive. In fact, sometimes even a doctor will say, oh, no, they don't have enough vision for driving. And you know what? That may absolutely be true. They may not be able to drive. But they may be, surprisingly, depending on the kind of condition they have, how much vision they still have. There are a number of people who are deafblind who have been able to drive, believe it or not. And so we have really great information in the Dual Sensory Project about that. It's always nice if you can drive and you're not dependent on other people. But if you're going to be using public transportation or Lyfts or Ubers, we want to start checking that out early and giving our kids experiences. I know my daughter does not drive, but she did take driver's ed in high school, and that was a really valuable experience for her. She learned to ride the bus in those courses. She learned to call a cab. Now she can call a Lyft or Uber, and those skills are good skills to have. We also need to start filling in the pieces about living arrangements. Remember, in a lot of cases, we've been our child's intervener, so we're bringing the world to them all the time. And their idea of what happens in terms of where you live may not be completely filled in, even if they smile and nod a lot. So we want to start helping them build a picture of different options. Some of us, after high school, get our own home or live in an apartment or a dorm. Some of us live in an apartment with some support. Some of us do better in a family-style group living arrangement, and some of us continue to live with extended family because that's our family culture, and that works best for us. So it's not like one of these arrangements are better than the other. It's what's best for your child. As long as we're giving that young person the right to grow up, then together we can plan anything that seems good and reasonable. And going on to slide 11, and I want to list some of the important agencies that are here to support adults with developmental disabilities. This can be a little bewildering, I admit that, because we've been used to mostly getting services for our children through our doctor, through our child's school, and if they're eligible for DD services through our DD program managers and our network of friends. And now there are some other agencies that we may or may not have utilized that I want you to be aware of, because they can really help with service coordination. They can help you learn transition planning for your child and help you get pieces in place. One is the group I work for, the North Dakota Dual Sensory Project. Now, we do not serve adults, but we work very closely with these other agencies in helping young people with dual sensory impairments in our state launch into adult life. A lot of times we're tracking down applications, we're helping you with the information, we're answering questions about that. We're setting up meetings. There's a lot of technical assistance services we can provide. The second one is the Helen Keller National Center, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Certainly, we have independent living centers in our state that offer a wide variety of services to help people live independently in the community, and they have a lot of insider knowledge. So if your child, in addition to having a dual sensory loss, has cerebral palsy and you want to meet a young person who's living independently in the community with cerebral palsy, they may be able to set you up with someone. So get to know who your nearest independent living center is. We also have North Dakota Assistive, which is the assistive technology project in our state. And in addition to helping with assessments and finding a lot of resources that help people be more independent, they have a very specialized program that's federally funded called I Can Connect that will pay for communication devices for young people with dual sensory loss who qualify. And you can call us and we'll help you get connected, or you can call them directly and ask about I Can Connect. Now, there are also adult service providers. Some of them have a lot of experience in supporting young people with dual sensory loss. Others do not, but they're eager to learn. We have a growing number of recreational providers in the state providing adaptive recreation. And then, of course, we have the DD services. So, just like in your family, you might turn to your sister-in-law for this and your best friend for that and your neighbor for this and your cousin's third wife for that or whatever it is. You have these people that you go to, your go-to people. So now as you support your child in transitioning, you're going to have some go-to organizations. So, you know, make a list of these names, look them up online, find out what they offer and what they do, and engage your child in doing that with you to the extent possible. I'm going to go on to slide 12 and just show you the Helen Keller National Center for the Deafblind Youth and Adults. So they don't work with kids, only youth and adults have centers across the country, as you can see on the map. And this woman that we see in the picture here is Laura Benji, and she's a regional rep for North Dakota. And so she and I have each other on speed dial. They offer a wide variety of services that I'm going to talk about in the next slide. So this is directly off their website, just because I had to save time. But so they offer an on-campus service where the young person with a dual sensory loss as part of launching into adult life trains on-site at their headquarters in New York and is surrounded by their experts in assistive technology, vocational services, communication, yada, yada, yada. They also have huge clearinghouse of information on combined vision and loss. One of the things that we see often as a parent, you kind of get information about your child's condition somewhere between birth and age 12, and then you really don't update that because you have a working kind of understanding of what's going on. You have an array of perhaps doctors that you're dealing with. And somebody told you when your child was 3 that kids with CP could never be toilet trained. And so you just continue operating on that. One of the nice things about connecting with the center is it helps you update. How do people with my child's etiology change into adulthood? You might not have looked at that too much. You might not have been able to look at that too much. And now you're wanting to see a little further around the corner. So they are great for that. They also offer a deafblind immersion experience. That's kind of like a two-weeker where you just go for a shorter period of time or a week, and they can focus on particular aspects of transition with your child. They also offer off-campus services. So I'm working with a young person from our state right now who's going to, VR is going to hopefully, if all goes well, fund them to go for 2 weeks in the summer, and then that same team is going to come back with that child and train the adult service provider on every aspect of their support. And that is really nice because sometimes as educators, as teachers or therapists or specialists, you know, we can't very well cross those lines once your child turns 18 or 21 if they're staying in school longer. So it's nice to have this service. And in addition, they have a ton of professional learning opportunities that you can check out as well. I've gone back to the National Center on Deaf Blindness, and they have a set of specific recommendations that improve transition, that results in better outcomes on their transition page. So again, another resource, and they're now going to come under the Helen Keller umbrella, in some ways. They'll still be the National Center on Deaf Blindness, but they're just, working more closely with the Helen Keller Center. I can't wait to see their new website. I go to their website all the time. It has so much great information. So I encourage you to take a look at that as you're planning for transition. This is us, the Dual Sensory Project, and we provide technical assistance not only to parents and families, but to teams as well. So we'll travel to your school, meet with the team, help them do some role release and, you know, learn how they're going to do this for a person who not only doesn't see but doesn't hear very well either. You know, look at the exemplar qualities that should be in an IEP for a student who's deafblind. We do parent and youth education. Right now, we're in collaboration with the National Center on Deafblindness. We're offering a series of OHOA classes every semester. OHOA stands for Open Hands, Open Access. Because hands for people with dual sensory loss are often their eyes, their ears, and the voice all at the same time. And they have a series of modules. You can take these modules as a parent or as a professional, and you can take them, just go on their website and download them and get them. So if you have a VR counselor or a teacher, who's new to the world of dual sensory loss, you can show them these modules, and they're very practical and very specific about every aspect of development, training, and support for someone who has a dual sensory loss. Or through MyNet State, through us, you can take them as a professional for credit. And there's a fee for that. You pay the fee, $50, but when you've completed the module, we reimburse those teachers the $50. And I'm happy to say that we have a large cohort of teachers and professionals who have gotten excited about these modules because they're fairly easy to do. And they are interested in professional development, and it's really nice. They can, if they just need a piece, they can go and get that specific piece and learn it right now because they have the student. But if they want to just do it for professional development, they can kind of systematically go through all the modules. And it's free because they can get reimbursed. So it's a really good opportunity. There are some general transition resources in our state. Depending on the functioning of your child and what their needs are, I just want you to be aware of them. So this is an app for students with disabilities with an IEP ages 14 and older, and it can help detail your special ed services, produce a draft transition plan. Based on your answers, kind of helping you create that roadmap. The other thing in slide 17 is the Launch My Life website, which again has, it's a collaborative effort of all these agencies. And while it wasn't designed for students with significant cognitive, sensory, physical disabilities, it does have some nice pieces related to transition that I just want you to be aware of. So if we go back to slide 3, as I close this out, what is possible? We're going to begin building that vision. What do we need to make the vision a reality? And how do we get there? And feel free, if you want to talk about that specific to your child and, with their dual sensory loss, to give me a call. Deneen, why didn't I put my contact information at the end of this? What's the matter with me? I guess I must have been tired. So, but usually I do, but Deneen can get you the information as well. And I'm going to stop yakking now. You've been a great group to just listen to me blither on. Linda Ellers, I know you're on the call. If I didn't put you to sleep, have you ever heard me talk this much in my life?
No.
So I've been pouring out my heart and thoughts to you now for quite a while. So I'm just opening it up for questions, if you have any, or just a conversation.
That was great, Kathy. I always learn something from you every time you speak. One thing I will, this is Deneen, one thing I will add is that, and I don't know how it would work for dual sensory, but Family Voices on our website has a transition notebook. So it is, we have one for younger families, and then we have the transition notebook, and they're both very similar, but it would keep track of medications, doctor's appointments, therapy visits, any appointments that, that the child may have, and then for the youth to be able to start keeping track of that if they're able to kind of prepare for their own, taking care of their own health care needs. So that is also available to you all on our website.
Thank you, Deneen.
Kathy, I do have a question. A lot of times I get called in at transition time trying to find a home for some of the significant deafblind kids. And is there a resource to kind of, like in North Dakota, a list of possible places to go check out that would handle like medical fragile?
You always ask really good questions. I don't know of a specific list. We're sort of fragmented in North Dakota. You almost have to look at the region that you're in and go to the DD program managers in those regions because that's part of what their role is to connect you.
Kathy, would NDACP have a kind of a list like that?
See,
I doubt it. You could talk to Bruce Murray. He's the executive director for the NDACP stands for the North Dakota Association of Community Providers. Not all community providers in the state belong to that, but most of them do. And they, while technically all of the providers should be able to support anyone with an intellectual and developmental disability, but in reality, some are more experienced at that than others. And he may have some insider knowledge on that. I have some insider knowledge on that, but I don't have a list, Linda. So okay. It depends on where we are. We could have a conversation about that. That's not a bad idea. The mm-hmm. thing about a list like that is if people acquire skills and they change. I think the one thing I would look for in a provider is not only is two things, their willingness to take direction and learn mm-hmm. and how eagerly they would embrace that and what attention they would give that. And then I would take a look at what kind of supports they could put in place for my child and what is that going to look at, like on the weekend when they're short-staffed and my kid has a lot of needs. How do they communicate in working out those issues is just as important as, you know, knowing that they've been in business for 20 years and they are nice people. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, Linda?
Yep.
Yeah, sorry I don't have an easy answer, but I can work on it. I just don't have a list right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, each individual is really individualized in this field, so.
Yeah. So even if you served other people with intellectual disabilities, when you get into young people with the dual sensory losses, that's a whole new ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And providers can take those OHOA modules as well.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Ooh, look at this. You're done with 3 minutes to spare.
And I know you are timely.
Okay. I can go watch the show at 9.
Well, there's so much to transition, but you just can't cover it all in an hour. But I just tried to give you kind of a roadmap to get started and think about.
Yeah. So very good. I keep doing says I always learn something new when I talk to you.
Well, I'm always learning from other people, so it's a mutual admiration society. All right. Well, be well, everyone. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much, Kathy. Good night, everyone.
Janine?
Yes.
Oh, did I send you the link for the eval?
No.
No, I might not have yet, but I have it ready, so I'll send that tomorrow.
Okay. I'll send, and then that'll be fine, and then I'll send your contact information with the evaluation so that they have it.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Kathy.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.